in a world full of straight people. Aren't you glad there's WOW Presents Plus, the number one place in the world to see Drag Race? And so much more. Subscribe to WOW Presents Plus. Still only $4.99. Subscribe today as streamed on TV.
Start your engines and join me in the new mobile game, RuPaul's Drag Race Superstar. May the best superstar win. Available now.
I honestly, okay, I'm going to start here. Mm-hmm. I should be the nervous one here because I have something that I want to discuss with you, Dave, and I'd like to bring our guest into this because I really value his insight and I think he'll have something to say and he'll also maybe protect me a little bit. Just to introduce him properly, an actor I've had the great pleasure of sharing the boards with. And some legendary performances, but you've also seen him on Grey's Anatomy, 9-1-1, This Is Us, The Morning Show. Obviously, we'll be talking about Jen Aniston. And he's an actual legitimate influencer, which, of course, we'll get into as well. Clayton Ferris.
Hi. Clayton Ferris.
Hi. Oh, my God. Thank you for having me. I'm an influencer.
When I tell you the list of people who, when I'm looking at Instagram, I can tell it's going to be a comedy thing, the list of people I don't immediately break my hand swiping through is very short. You are at the top of it.
Thank you. I mean, that's amazing.
Your work is funny.
Oh, he's your social always media work gonna give you something powerful.
I feel something like fresh, something brand new
in the social media space. Just to be like, it's funny is like such a huge compliment because we know that it's rough out there, but thank you. I'm so glad.
Yeah, and sometimes like I feel like to call someone an influencer is, you know, an insult. And with you, it's not, we'll get into all of it, but here's what I wanted to talk about.
Okay, now I'm nervous.
Okay. Clayton, we've been doing this show for how long? 8 years or something? 7 years? A long time.
Seven-ish, yeah.
Obviously, I could not love Dave Holmes more. He's sweet as pie and so sensitive and, you know, just an angel on this earth. That goes without saying.
But,
you know, we're always in a, you know, we do this once a week. We're constantly shuffling around, scheduling stuff. We're always kind of in an email chain with our producer, Renee, and, you know, moving stuff around. That's just like nature of the beast. And it's the nature of the show that like one of us is going to have to like reschedule something last minute, whatever. And, you know, I have often been the one that's been like, oh fuck, I forgot to tell you guys I have something that day. I'm so sorry. And, you know, I'm throwing a lot of exclamation points in there. Now, Dave Holmes will come in, Clayton, and say, sometimes we'll be like, how about Wednesday at 1? And Dave will do a reply all that says, can't, comma, sorry, period. Send. Mm-hmm. And I will, that shatters me in this. I'm like, well, this, he hates me. I am such a piece. I mean, it's, you know, it sends shockwaves through my being. And I want to hear from you, Dave. Obviously, yeah. I have my own theories about where this style of communication comes from, but I first want to actually ask you, Clayton, what is your rule of thumb when it comes to that? Are you the over apologetic, like, oh my God, I fucked up, you know?
No, I mean, I feel like I'm definitely the same way as Dave. I'm just kind of like, no, can't do that. Just short and sweet, but knowing that I don't mean anything extra, that I never mean anything extra. And I, you know, like, you don't want to be like, sorry, can't do it, Matt. But just so you know, you're still a good human and people love you. Like,
yeah.
You don't need that there. It's not.
You don't need that there. Okay. Personal.
That's how I see it.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah. And it's often, I will say, in my own defense, sometimes, like, my schedule is ever changing, especially now. And sometimes something will move into a spot in which I had previously thought I was open. And in the meantime, sure. I found that I've not been open and I didn't get around to like updating my availability. And it's like, I'm in the middle of something else and I just want to make sure it is known that that is out. And I want to get that email out without having to, you know, make a production of it just to get it out so that that is crossed off the list and it doesn't become another thing that I forget to do. And then we're in actual trouble because the thing is happening in 5 minutes and I forgot about it.
That makes absolute sense. Couldn't respect that more. Now, you're talking about a time constraint. Now, I guess what I'm not even proposing, but just sort of like pondering is if you threw some extra exclamation points in there to sort of get a tone across. It would help, but also it's not your style. And that's where...
You go, Clayton. CEO energy almost.
Yeah.
It's kind of just being like, nope, can't. You know, it's like, it just has that energy of just like, I know, Dave, you've worked in maybe corporate media and stuff like that. And I'm sure that's how people in that world talk.
Sure.
You're on something.
Yeah, sometimes. I try to give some voice to whatever message I'm trying to send, but sometimes it's just like, while it is fresh in my mind and it just made a little beep sound in my email client thing, I want to get the no out and just not have to think about it anymore because it will like fall out of my short-term memory. And also, we've been working together forever. So
yeah,
I don't. Yeah,
exactly. And I know what to expect. I've just never... Because look, my dear friend Kulop also does this, and I have never called her out on it. I'm going to after this conversation. Okay. I'm going to.
Good. This is good. This feels healthy, Matt.
You need to do
it. It does. And I do the exactly. I need to do the work. I am the problem here because, like you're saying, Clayton, it's like if you're referring to that as CEO energy, like it's not CEO energy to be like, oh, I'm so sorry. I fucked up. I like with a million exclamation points. Also,
executive assistant.
Dave Holmes has a brand. He would never use that word. He doesn't think of himself that way. He's better than that. But if we were to you know, put a label on it, it's cool and it's intellectual and it's understated. I, of course, am none of those things. So I'm more uninhibited by that. And I think that throwing those extra exclams in there, it's also like I think maybe a little more femme. You know what I'm saying?
Okay. It's like doing the exclamation points with hearts at the bottom.
Right.
If you could on a keyboard.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay. And I, so Lisa by the Frank, way, absolutely would. Words.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, now I'm never going to change. But are you...
And I don't want you to.
Okay. Are you wounded by, because I know some people are, a thumbs up reply via text?
Oh, it's actually not safe to send those to me.
Wow.
Are you not? You're fine with those?
That does not bother me one bit.
Do you respond to group text? No, I'm thumbs up all day.
Yeah.
Group text. Thread, I don't respond.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I do. Well, it depends. Some of them I do, some of them I don't. There are some I'll ignore for weeks at a time, but others I'm in there. And when I'm in there, it's a heart at the very least.
Okay.
Is like a little more, it's like, you know, that's you can't really imagine Dave Holmes throwing hearts around. It's like, there's also like a masculinity to the Dave Holmes brand that I think sort of requires the stoic thumbs up period energy.
The level at which I am flattered by that statement is going to send me back to therapy. So here's something in the world of electronic communication that took me aback. I wasn't wounded by it, but it was like, oh, okay. And I will call her out by name. Molly McNierney, wife of Jimmy Kimmel, old friend of mine, grew up in St. Louis years after I did. We did improv together at IO for a long time. She's the best. And we had been texting about something. And then on Twitter later that day, she was like, just know that when I end a text with X or XO, the conversation is over.
Oh.
And, you know, and she had just done that to me like an hour before, which I was like, okay. You know what I mean? Like it was like in this moment, I could feel as though I have been like slighted, or I could just be like, okay, this is just the way that it is. And it's okay.
But had you responded to the XO? No. Did you try to keep the conversation going?
Oh. I wonder if I did. Okay. I actually don't remember whether I did.
Like if you know, like I was around for the invention, like when cell phones became part of our lives and communicating this way, like came in, like I was already like 18 or 20, however old I was, older even. It's just like I have pre-cell phone communication things instilled in me. So it's like, mm-hmm. I feel like I just still have that old energy in how I communicate now.
Mm-hmm.
Makes any sense.
Sure. Yeah. Clayton Ferris, such a pleasure to actually finally have you.
Yes.
I mean, how are you?
I'm good. I feel like I to be on this podcast at this moment in my life is kind of unique because all this stuff that I feel like y'all talk about on your podcast is like the stuff I'm currently talking about in therapy. So this mm-hmm. is part of my exposure therapy to come on this podcast.
Explain what you mean.
And please.
Like, because of like my, you know, like I identify as bisexual and how I am faced with this fear of how the world sees me and judges me and puts labels on me and just kind of, you know, being in my 40s now and coming into my own, wanting to be fully authentically myself. And what better way to do that than on in public like this?
Mm-hmm.
Know what I mean?
I do.
Is this a bit of a public coming out for you? I mean, I know that you're not closeted in any way, but no, I also can't think of when I've, yeah.
I don't think it's like a reclamation of me trying to clarify who I am in hopes that other people might be able to relate to that in the way that my whole life I've never felt like I fit in on either side of the spectrum. And so I just, and I'm finding that to be open and talk about it is the only way to really be like, oh yeah, this is who I am. And this is, and now I'm more comfortable with myself.
Mm.
It's honesty in this way is such a thrill. You know, when you get to actually, you know, have those conversations that you've been biting back for a long time, it's like, it's exciting.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, truly. Because I have known you for a long time and I just assumed that you identified as gay. And that's on me, you know, for making the assumption. But is identifying as bisexual like an evolution, or am I just, I've just been out of the loop?
I think it's more like never really identifying any way and just being in certain situations or rooms or whatever it is where I'm just perceived a certain way because I am kind of, you know, an open person that it's not like I don't do gay things and have like gay culture points, but mm-hmm. I don't feel that 100% me, and I don't feel like being straight is 100% me. And it's just, so it's like, yeah, I mean, back in when we hung out, it was, I don't know, like that's the thing is I don't know how people see me. Like, you know, Michael Henry, the comedian that like does the sketches, like the super gay sketches, recently reached out to me and was like, hey, we want you to be in this sketch. One of the roles is like hungry bottom. And then the other role is waiter. And I was like, which role do you want me for? And he's like, hungry bottom. of course. And I was like, oh, well, I actually don't identify as a hungry bottom, so I don't know if I would rather play the waiter. He's like, what? You're not gay? I'm shocked. And this is someone that only knows my public persona from the internet. So it's just like things like that always stir up in my life. So I hope you're even more confused now talking to me.
I mean, are you one of these people who believes that bottoms should only play bottoms?
Yes. I mean, that's it.
Okay.
It needs to go all the way down the line, you know?
Okay. Okay. That's fair.
Anyways,
Well, yeah, listen, a bottom would, I'm not saying anything about myself, but would be the one who's responding with the all the exclamation points that you're not using. So all I'm saying is this speaks to a consistency
Right.
in you. Wow. So did you film the sketch? Did you play the Hungry
Oh,
Bottom?
I did not film that sketch. Solely because, I mean, I feel like that's what I'm saying is like when it's come to things, when things come my way that are like, can you play this gay role that's like maybe more flamboyant or like that's how they want it? It's like I don't feel authentic. I don't feel like that's authentic for me. And
Yeah.
it's just like, but I don't want to sound like I'm like trying to like, there's also that whole thing of like when, you know, in the gay community, when you say you're bisexual, people are like, sure you. And that's something for me that's always been kind of like, okay, I don't know where I fit in.
Yeah, gay men in particular can be real shitty about that.
And also, I mean, I too have had that thing of going in for when I was like going out for more acting stuff and I was sort of freshly out. It was the waiting rooms would always be like me and a bunch of, you know, people ready to play the bitchy assistant, right? And it was like there's this weird expectation of like what a gay role should be. It's a little bit less that way now, but not that much.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to speak so clearly to can't sorry culture, but I do feel like in those situations, I felt like I was being asked to live up to someone else's uninformed stereotype of what
Yeah,
the situation
exactly.
actually
Like
was.
that's actually what it is. It's like really hard to live in a world where people have like stereotypes of you that you don't feel like you fit in. And I'm sure that's everybody in like the world. But I think especially
Probably.
yeah, in the queer world, it's like, you know, like I am in a relationship with a woman. Last night I looked at myself in the mirror and I was like, I look like a finance bro that has three kids and drives a Tesla. And I'm like, I cannot believe this is how I look in the world based on my like history and how, you know, like just who I was. And like because I always say like I got like the worst side of like being gay. Like I got picked on, called the F word every day as a kid and all that stuff. And as an adult kind of came into like my bisexuality, but still have all the traumas that go along with being a gay man.
Oof.
It's
Yeah.
dense.
It's a tough road, but yeah, I mean, the thing about, you know, auditioning for these like sort of more like stereotypically femme roles has been an ongoing struggle for me too, because earlier on when it didn't feel like a match, I think I was like, oh, that's your own like internalized homophobia or whatever. It's like you're afraid to go there. You're afraid to let that part of you fully out. And now it's that I'm older, I'm kind of like, no, it's not that. It's just that I just don't like being like saddling myself with being self-conscious about how if I come off butcher femme or anything in between. You know, like I'm literally putting myself on tape after this for something that's like the sort of bitchy gay dad role. And every time I'm doing it, I'm like, how much am I full of shit right now? Or am I, you know what I mean? It's hard to sort of find the
But like the
authenticity.
acting teacher in me would just be like, just do your version of that. It doesn't have you even you are putting on this like idea of what that should be. But it's
Right.
also funny to be in that world of auditions when you see an audition that's like it's like type A. Like it doesn't say gay, but it says all these other descriptives that make you know that they want like the gay assistant that's holding like a clipboard. Like it's in I mean I've
Yeah.
done so many roles. Most of the roles I've done on TV have been in that realm. And it's like, yeah. It doesn't say it, but it almost goes back to being like that version of like the sissy, you know, like they yeah. be like whoever Gomer Pyle or like whatever it is. It's like that version of like this uptight guy that like, I don't know. I think it's still in the world. And those are the parts that I get. And I still audition for them. Like, it's not like I'm like, I won't do a role unless he's a bisexual and his hair's thinning. but I don't know.
Even when it's like positive, years ago, Matt, you and I went up to the Just for Laughs Festival in Montreal.
All right.
And the guy, Matt and Bowen from Las Culturistas had this big live, I Don't Think So Honey, like Divas edition, where it was like, you had to do an I Don't Think So Honey about a diva. And they asked me to do it and I didn't want to turn it down. But I also was like, that's kind of not that's not the way my humor is. I think they're hilarious, but I'm I kind of don't have that specific gene, or I do. And in a desire to fit in when I was 12, I like smothered it with a pillow and killed it. And now I'm a person who sends terse emails and who knows what I could have been if I didn't have this.
True.
You know, if I wasn't raised in this conservative Catholic all boys school environment or whatever, and it like sent me down this fucking spiral that like, still, when I think about it, it's like, I don't know what is me and what is not me. I don't know what is the mask mask and what is the face sometimes, you know, and it's hard to know. And as you've said, I think all people do go through this to a certain degree, but I think they are able to talk about it more openly. Yeah. At a younger age. So like, you know, a cheerleader will be like, hey, I'm not just a dumb cheerleader or whatever. And like, talk about those perceptions and those stereotypes and whatever. But she can do that when she's 16.
Right.
Because it's sort of, it's still desirable to be whatever the stereotype is. And so, but you know, we start to have these conversations at like around 40, you know? And there are so many mental processes that are like cemented in your brain to, you know, stop you from thinking about these things or whatever, or to like put on whatever performance you feel like you need to put on.
Yeah. And then when you do get into your 40s and you're like, wait, I want to be the most authentic version of myself. I want to be truly me. I'm not going to die. No one's going to pick on me if I, you know, like you finally feel safe. And then there's just a lot to unpack.
Yeah.
And emotion and a lot. It's like very like it's intense.
It is intense.
Yeah.
And I have terrible news for you. It remains intense for a long time. Yeah. You know, untying these knots is a thing that you do really for the rest of your life.
But that's life.
But that
that's life, baby. What kind of things are you doing to, I mean, obviously you mentioned therapy, but are there other like, I don't know, modalities that you're using to sort of like heal this stuff we're talking about?
I mean, I'm doing exposure therapy by going to gay sex parties.
How's that going?
It's great. No, I mean, I don't know. It's more just like realizing and actually like prepping for this podcast and listening to all your guests. It was really cool to hear everyone. Because we do it to other people too. You put like, even you two, like I look at you guys and I'm like, you guys are married. You guys have normal lives. It's like, you just, you know, like, I'm like, they really know who they are and have their shit together. But it's like, you're talking to a lot of these like queer icons too. And you're realizing like, oh, everyone has this like weird, unique kind of like acceptance that they have to go through. No matter where you are on like that long lettered spectrum, it's just really cool that you guys like allow the space for that. But it's just knowing that like you're safe, like you can be who you are and you're safe, like you're not gonna be bullied. Like a lot of my stuff comes from severe bullying growing up in the South, and like the real tragic thing of like getting picked on when you're just being your most authentic self, which is like a kid, you know. And it's just, it's hard, and it's sad to realize that you still carry that same thing around that you had when you were a little kid. And that's was the biggest like breakthroughs and breakdowns and anger that I've had in this process, is just like, just knowing that you like, yeah, it's like, it's still emotional. It's like, it's knowing,
of course it is.
When you're a kid, you're an adult now, and you are still that fucking little kid that got picked on. And it's so cliche and sounds so whatever, but it's just so, when you go through that kind of like the process of realizing that's why, you know, that shit still holds. Cause I've always been the person that was like, I was bullied as a kid and look at me, I'm fine. I'm good. And then like, when you really like break it down, you're like, oh no, that stuff affects you. And you have to be the most authentic version of yourself. You have to face those things and kind of move through them.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it happens at a time when your identity is coming together. So there's no way that doesn't get like stirred into the mixture, you know?
Yeah.
It just, it can't not.
Yeah. But it's like, as an intellectual person, you think you have it figured out way sooner. And it's not until you kind of tap into your feelings that you realize you don't.
Yeah. Mm. And probably, I think, part of that comes from a need to put a good face on, you know, being not straight, you know, like presenting to the world as a queer person. You want to do from a place, at least the appearance of a place of strength, you know. You don't want to be like, hey world, I'm bisexual and I'm a little fucked up about it. You know what I mean? And like, it's a little sad and weird and I don't know what to do. Like, whatever. Nobody wants to like make that declaration to their family and friends, you know. You want to be like, hey, I'm bisexual and everything is super cool and great.
Right.
And you can convince yourself of that to a degree. And then, you know, and then you hit 40.
You obviously experienced bullying as a kid, but in high school, I feel like I have such a clear image of who you were in high school. I feel like I already know what you're going to say, but you tell us who you were in high school and how you got by.
Well, I mean, it's really the like, that like conundrum, because I was also like, you know, like the most popular kid in school and like got all the superlatives or whatever. Like I got like, I think I got wittiest in high school.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted most talented, but actually later on I was like, no, you want wittiest.
Yeah,
sure. But that was your talent.
People are afraid of wittiest.
They're afraid of it. But I think, I mean, I was just like that. I was like a semi-popular, like I was a happy kid that did like musical theater and like had a lot of friends, but I still had this sect of people that were like vicious to me. And it was, you know, like the like super straight popular guys that hated me because I was friends with like their girlfriends and like, you know, I could move easy through groups and I had different types of groups as friends, but no male friends until I was like an adult, you know, because I was like scared of those people from the time I was like 6 years old. And I don't want to sound like I'm like, you know, had to have a bad life or whatever, but it's in my own experience, this was like kind of what I went through. But yeah,
that's what I was predicting. So happy that I was right. Have you ever had a moment of like a, you know, big mistake, huge sort of moment of retribution with those people from high school? You've gone to a class reunion and everyone's seen you on TV.
I've never had the moment for me. Like I've never had, I love the big mistake, huge moment. That's one of my favorite moments, but it's just funny to see it happen now when it's like, these people are following you online or there, you do go home and you're like the person that got out of like the town. And the same people that are your bullies are like in your face, really close to you, drunk as fuck, telling you how much they love you and how funny they think you are. And you're just like, wow, what a weird circle to go through.
But that is the big mistake, huge moment.
Yeah. I mean, the big mistake, huge moment is like, because of how you bullied me, I have a lot of big goals and a lot of energy to like do what I want to do in this world. So thank you for bullying me. No, I'm just kidding. But I mean, I would never go back to be like, look at me now. I'm on Instagram. Like, I'm fine. It's like, that's how people from Texas grow up. It's not like some kid's fault, you know?
Yeah, but listen, those Instagrams are speaking for themselves. So let's talk about, I mean, I'm sure everyone's already following you, but you shoot, hilarious character videos. I would say you have a little bit of a specialty in satirizing like the obnoxious Hollywood stereotypes. By the way, I ran into you at the Americana, I don't know, around Christmas time. There you were standing in front of the fountain in some kind of wig, filming something that I'm sure caught fire the very next day. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm seeing it. I think when Vine was a thing, you were a huge Viner.
I started out on Vine when it first came out. Like I was one of those kind of actors that was really connected to like staying an actor and being like, this is what I do. I'm an actor. I don't make content. But Vine came along and my like friend Alana Forsyth, we just started making videos together and they blew up and we ended up having 1 million followers on Vine. And this was like a fun time because it was pre-influencer. It was pre-how we look at social media now. It was literally just like really fun to make videos. It was very collaborative and there was no money involved. It was just about like being stupid and having fun. And then I don't know if you know the story about Vine, how all the top Viners got together and basically unionized and went because Twitter had bought Vine and they go to Twitter and they're like, we each want $1 million. This was their ask. They're like, we each want $1 million. And Twitter, and these are people like Logan Paul, King Batch, David Dobrik, like those types of people who are still like in the internet ether. And Twitter was like, no. Instagram had just introduced video. So all those people left Twitter and or left Vine and went to Instagram. And that's what kind of started like the downfall of Vine.
But did Instagram give them $1 million to
No, but
join?
they just all like union, like they literally unionized and were like, we're leaving Vine, fuck them. Cause they weren't taking, cause Vine didn't have an infrastructure to take care of its creators at all. Like there was no sort of like, cause they didn't know what it was gonna be. No one was
Right.
anticipating what it was gonna be.
But does Instagram have that infrastructure?
Yeah, there's more, there's, I mean, TikTok's way better about it cause you can actually make like real money on TikTok just from posting videos. Instagram doesn't have the, they had a program called bonuses, but they don't do it anymore. So you're just like, I think that brands still pay more for influencers to make content on Instagram, but Instagram's not as good at it. But anyways, it's just kind of being from that Vine world and continuing to do it, kind of like how people have a stand-up muscle where they're like, this is, I go out and I test jokes and like, it's the same thing that I do. It's just it's the thoughts that are running through my head about like how I view the world, and they come out in like 30-second videos. Yeah.
So when do you think you're going to make the transition into boxing
Soon.
as Logan Paul has done before? Yeah, okay. Okay, great. Good.
Yeah,
I think it's a good move.
that's such a weird transition, but
It's a very weird transition. I don't
boxers are
understand it at all.
boxers.
They're apparently very good boxers. Wow. Yeah. Did you ever go to the Vine, like the Vine building on Vine?
I never
Didn't a
went.
bunch of them move out here?
Yeah, a bunch of them actually lived on Vine
Right.
together. I mean, I've shot with some of those people in the past, but no, I was never like do not fit in that world.
Gotcha.
Because if you know, like I had this theory that you know how like we don't see a lot of social media stars actually transitioning into being legit actors or like we don't see that a lot. And I don't think it's because they're not necessarily that good or that like, there's people can take acting classes or whatever. But it's just because they don't want to do, once you're in that world and you're making that much money and you're kind of like controlling your whole thing, no one's giving you notes on your videos and you're shooting a video that takes whatever 10 minutes, they don't have the stamina to work in like the traditional media world. Like you can't put an influencer on set for 13 hours. They would like they would melt. It's
Yeah, no, they're also like, sorry, I'm gonna make like 5 grand
Yeah,
for a
they're
week or
like,
something, and
exactly.
I'm yeah.
They're like, that's peanuts. That's what I make in like a day or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's also, and you straddle the two worlds because you are a working actor, but you do fun stuff on the internet as well that does really well. But often, like, the screen doesn't get bigger, right? Like, if you train people to follow you on their phone, they're not going to follow you to TV somehow. They might follow you to the watch somehow, but like, but never to like the TV or the, you know, movie screen or whatever. It's like people get used to you in a specific way.
Right.
But you've still got, you know, you have like a TV career.
I do. And I still want to do more TV, but I think that what I've learned from the internet is I really am a maker and someone that wants to make things. Mm-hmm. And again, like what I've learned from the internet is, okay, yes, universe and whoever's listening, I do want to like take roles on television, obviously. Yeah. But at the same time, I think when you're making all your own content and I'm a writer, it's like, I want to be able to make my own stuff eventually. But the amount of jobs I've booked or opportunities I've received because of social media is really high. And I think it's because, I hope it's because I'm not just putting out like the worst kind of, like I'm trying to make my stuff good. And I'm hoping that people can see that it does transition. Like I have some major casting people follow me that'll bring me in for like cool stuff. And I'm like, whoa, I can't believe that this is happening. But I'm also really proud of myself that I'm building my own fucking career because, you know, I've lived in LA for 15 years. It's not like Hollywood's coming for me. It's like, I got to build my own little boat here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, y'all do.
Totally. I mean, that's, I think in the end, that's how it's kind of like what it's has to be anyways. Like you don't get discovered unless you're like 15,
mm-hmm.
43.
Yeah. Yeah. And who would want to be discovered when they're 15?
Exactly. Like I don't, yeah.
I haven't watched Quiet on Set yet, but I, you know, I feel like let's not be discovered at 15.
Yeah. I think the child actor thing is like really challenging and weird and not healthy. Because acting's not, let's be honest, it's not a healthy career, but it's also really fun. And, you know, some of us are addicted to highs and lows.
Yeah.
It's called addiction.
That's right. Wow.
Look it up.
Tell us about this girlfriend. How did you meet? Give us the meet cute and the whole love story.
Well, I mean, that's kind of like it's a fascinating story. It started with doing like kind of being in a place of like being like down and I had never really been in a relationship with a man. I had only been, you know, like dated here and there or like hookups and that sort of thing. And really had never been in a relationship all the way up until I was like 38, like a true healthy relationship. And I started hanging out with this girl that I was doing a play with. And we met doing this play and we started carpooling together. And we just became really, really great friends and started confide. We were in the same place emotionally in terms of like how we were feeling about life. And we just had a connection. And she was married at the time. And there was no intention for me to want like it. There was no intention of like, oh, I'm going to like get in here and get this woman. That wasn't at all what was happening. We were just friends. I'm very used to being friends with females and it not meaning anything. And, you know, I've had married female friends and their husbands not like be threatened by me or you know, anything like that. So I kind of ended up befriending the couple and we kind of became this like unit, if you will. Some call it a throuple. And because of
was it a throuple?
It was a throuple to a degree, yeah.
To the degree okay,
the degree of, you know, intense communication and then some experiences that were, you know, more advanced than just like talking.
Got it.
As a group.
Okay.
But that not really being like what the guy wanted and not really what I want. Like I've learned from that experience that being polyamorous or being open like that is kind of like, it's not for everybody. It's kind of like a must. It's kind of like, you have to have that, the ability to be like, spread your love multiple places or you don't. But they were in a place in their own marriage where they were kind of like wanting to open it up and shake things up a bit. And I think I just happened to come in at this certain time and they had an experience where he was able to go, he did something that basically gave her a, you know, a hall pass in a way. And it happened to be me. And we ended up like hooking up, and it was, you know, it was very, it was a, we had a good connection, and it was a good experience. And we were very open about what happened, but that kind of just opened the doors for their relationship to crumb, to their marriage to dissolve ultimately. Mm-hmm. And me and her decide to go, you know, decided what we were going to do. And I don't, it's not like we were like, okay, let's be a couple. But after that split up happened over, you know, this was also around right during COVID. Well, they got a divorce, and then 6 months later, COVID happened, and we lived together. And that was not, it wasn't easy or pretty. It was I was, you know, cause I had a lot of baggage to deal with about being alone my whole life, being, you know, on like queer, like how was I going to handle being in like this relationship, feeling like I was having parts of me kind of like dissolve, because when you get into like a hetero relationship, but you're queer, that part of you is not seen, you know, like people don't see it. It disappears. And that's just the world putting a new, like whatever label on you. But we went to therapy and worked through it. And like, that's where we are today. And the cool thing about us being such great friends before is there are no secrets between us. She knows everything about me. Like she had heard me tell her experiences about like me hooking up with a guy, or me being like, oh, I met this guy at this party, you know, like she's heard me say those things, and she sees me fully, and she doesn't ask me to like shut down a part of myself, which is nice.
Great. Yeah. It's necessary.
Yeah. Are you in touch with the ex-husband, either of you?
No.
No. Okay.
They had their own like falling out, you know, they had their own thing going on. But no, definitely blocked across all social media. Like I think at this point it's best we don't talk or see each other.
Okay.
And I don't think there was no blow up between me and him. It wasn't that, like he moved on very quickly, got married and had a baby within like 6 months. Like it's not,
wow.
It's not it, like, yeah. So that's kind of like, I forget that's always an interesting story to people.
Because very interesting story.
It's wild.
And especially that you're navigating and finding a way to keep the queer part of you alive and like integrated into this relationship.
Yeah. But it's not easy, because it's like, what does that mean? You know, like how does it show up when you're a 40-year-old man in a appears to be a heteronormative relationship? And that's the struggle that I'm like currently in, like how I mentioned at the beginning. It's like, that's what I'm like making sure that I can hold on to in a way, because people are so, it's interesting. And I'm sure y'all have dealt with this. Everyone's so comfortable with who they are these days and their sexuality, and they're like, not everyone, but there's a lot more openness in that world. And I think, like you mentioned, Dave, it's kind of like interesting to look back and be like, oh, if I had that sort of like openness or acceptingness from more people around me, like who would I be now? And like, I don't have any regrets about it, but it's worth exploring to be like the fullest version of myself. So I feel like I'm on an Oprah podcast.
That's the kindest thing that anyone's ever said to us. We, you know, we got a lot of, you know, just gay male listeners who, I don't know how, so they're going to slide into the DMs. This is what I'm getting to. How are you going to handle that?
I mean, I don't know. Like, that's the thing, is I'm not in an open relationship, really. So, I mean, but like, there's this weird obsession that I have right now, because it's like when you're on social media, you get recognized a lot. Like I don't walk around thinking I'm like this super famous person, but especially in my neighborhood of Silver Lake, if you see me walking around the reservoir wearing the hat I wear in most of my videos, people are like, oh, that's that guy. And it's always, I'm always so curious. I'm like, how do people see me in this world? Like, what do people think about me? Cause like my characters are not, like I have like a finance bro character and like a corporate guy, but most of my characters are these like ambiguous like LA people that shop at Erewhon, and you don't really know what their gender or sexuality, like that's how I think of it. Like they have no gender or sexuality, but I don't know. I don't know how I'll deal with that, but I do have to tell you, I have a friend who lives in Dallas that is, he's like my friend that's very into pop culture. He's gay. And he's the one that I'm always like, oh my God, I saw like Paris Hilton today. Like he's the one I text to say, you know, certain things that happen living out here. And he gets very excited about it. And he's said to me before, like, do you know the guys, like he listens to y'all's podcasts. And literally he's been like, do you know them? And I've like, I told him that I have known you guys. So like, he will be very excited that I'm on this podcast. That's all.
Hello. What's his name?
Manny Acala.
Manny.
Hi, Manny.
Thank you for listening, Manny.
See, Manny. And he literally said something. He said, tell Matt. This is true. He said, tell Matt, RIP Casey. I don't know what that means.
Every time I would go on the Bitch Sesh podcast, I would often fill in for Casey and pretend that she had died. I mean, very funny bit to pretend that your best friend is dead constantly. So I would always come on and say RIP Casey.
And he's a super fan.
Love it. He knows the inside jokes.
Well, of another podcast that's not this one, probably.
Love it.
Wow. Clayton, anything else that we haven't? I feel like we've really excavated some stuff.
We didn't even get into like the what you're watching and listening to.
Oh, yeah. Should we end on that?
What we normally begin with? Yeah, we'll end with a salad. Salad for dessert situation. What are you watching?
I think it's funny that I like started out the pod. Like I had so much anxiety before this podcast because I was like, this needs to be something important. And like, I hate when I put that anxiety first, but this means a lot to me that y'all had me on and allowed me to be part of like this like space. That's all.
Oh, stop.
Love on the spectrum.
Okay.
That's my like, just like the most delightful, like perfect thing that I've seen lately.
Have you watched Dave?
Not this season. As a matter of fact, I don't know that I've seen any of the it's American now, right?
There's an Australian one too.
And the first one I watched.
You just watched I just got turned on to this. I had never watched it. So I'm just finishing. We just finished all like four seasons of it.
Who are your, the American cast, who are your all-stars?
I mean, Danny, Danny is the one that's like, you know, very.
Oh, yes.
Looking for the power couple. Obviously Tanner.
Tanner's
just the one that's like so full of
everything.
But I just, something about that show just makes me happy. And I know some people have like an opinion of it that's like exploitive or something, but I think if you really like allow yourself to watch it and invest in those people, you're like, oh my God, I wish I was like these people. Like they're so
100%.
Like it's just really cool to see like that spectrum of people. And I love that show.
When Jennifer, the like expert, comes in and sort of gives them like, basically they teaches a class on how to have a first date, I am taking notes. I'm like, this is just great and a great reminder on just like how to be a person.
Yes.
In this world.
And I do feel like it's driven, like if you go on TikTok or like a lot of people now say that they're on the spectrum. Have you noticed this? Like everyone's like saying that they're like on the spectrum. And I'm so curious if that's a weird trend that's happening or if it's like just more people are being diagnosed or I don't know.
Or are just more people on the spectrum and we've never realized it before. And now there's more awareness.
Totally. You
know. Yeah. And the spectrum is wider than we originally thought.
Right.
Yeah.
And you avoid love for a long time, like I did until my 40s. Am I on the spectrum?
Wow. Yeah.
Well, you're on the sexuality spectrum. We've established that.
That's true.
You're in the alphabet and maybe on the spectrum.
LGBTIC for confusion.
That's right.
Sure. Thank you not only for doing this, but for being so open and honest. And yeah, this is why we do this show.
That's right.
Honestly, right? Thanks for allowing me and having me. This is awesome.
And let's get coffee in real life, and we'll talk about shit we couldn't talk about on there.
Perfect. That sounds great. Fun.
Perfect.
That is our show. Please do give us a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and follow us on Instagram at HomophiliaPod. Homophilia is a World of Wonder production, music by Ben Wise. Our executive producer is Renee Colvert. Our associate producer is Jess Walensky, and our audio engineer is Justin Mattson. Many thanks to Michael Pressman and everyone at World of Wonder.